We're doing our class on the Jewish home. You gentlemen asked that this year I should quote the sources I'm quoting. You said that it's beneficial for you. So even though previous years I did not quote sources, so far this year I'm quoting sources. I would like to hear from you again in a week or two. I'll ask again if you don't find it tedious that I'm quoting sources. But for now, I'll do it the way you asked. So there is a braisa in Avos de Rabbi Nasan, which says the following. It says in Psalms, not in Psalms, in Ecclesiastes, Baboker zera et zarecha, in the morning plant your seed, ולערב אל תנח ידך, and at night don't stop, don't let your hand rest. כי אינך יודע, you don't know which one is going to succeed, King Solomon says. So the Talmud, over there, the Braisa says, if you had children when you were young, have children when you were old. If you had students when you were young, have students when you're old. You never know who's going to succeed. Rabbi Akiva had 24,000 students. They all died. And then his last five students, they kept the whole Torah going. So what we're going to discuss tonight is the importance of not getting old. Okay? Peter Pan. We have to stay young forever. One of the greatest challenges of learning, of education, of growth, of Torah observance, and of marriage is when a person gets old. Old in their mind, old in their perspective, old in their attitude. A person can sometimes say, I'm too old for this. Or I'm too old to change. Or this is just the way I am. Well, marriage involves flexibility. Marriage involves being able to take what our partner is giving and work with it. We often say that marriage is like a puzzle, right? You fit missing pieces together. But people will sometimes say, yeah, but I'm a square and she's a circle. We don't fit. Wait, the Ribono Shel Olam created men and women different. The trick here is that as life goes on, we have to match ourselves to the fact that our spouses also shift and change. And we're not allowed to come up with this excuse, this is just the way I am, this is the way it's going to be. We cannot be rigid. We have to be flexible. And we have to retain that flexibility, and marriage involves constant flexibility. So I want to quote a few stories. Let's see, do we have a tractate brachos here? So the Gemara in Tractate Brachos brings down a story. Says like this. It says, when you're having a meal, so then the cup that's offered at the end of the meal, we bench over a cup. So the cup that we bench over at the end of the meal, that cup has blessing to it. And it brings blessing to those who drink from it. So it says that you should offer that cup to the host. You should offer that cup, according to one opinion, to the host's wife. So the Gemara says they were having a meal. And when they ended the meal, they said the blessing after the meal. And when they finished, let's see if I can find Gemara. Where is it? Okay, I'm now finding the Gemara. Okay, I'm now finding it. What? Thank you. What's at the end? It's at the end of where? Maybe. You want to find it? I'll give you the. I'll give you the Gemara. You look.
Just.
Nope. Ah, yeah, 400 barrels. Yeah. You remember where it is? Good. So you'll find it first. Rodrigo, look for one more second. It should be around here. Okay. You're saying it's here? Okay, you look for it somewhere around here. Best at that. You want, I can tell you the words to look up. Mimadure milium smartute kalme, or arba mea dani de chamra, or yalta. Saying, so the Gemara says that Yalta was the woman of the house, and when they finished benching, they didn't offer her the cup of benching. They didn't send her the cup. So the rabbi asked, why aren't you passing the cup to my wife? So the guest said, because the halacha is, it's good enough if you drink from it. The house will be blessed from you drinking from it. You don't have to pass it to her. So Yalta heard that. She went up to the attic, and she bashed 400 barrels of wine. So her husband, he sent up to her, you know, all that wine that you just spilt, consider it as though I sent it to you, you know, peace. So she retorts back, you know, mimadure mile umismartute kalme. You find lice in old rags. You find nice tales from peddlers. You guessed who asked you for your input, who asked you for your help. Now I want to ask you, if you got your wife upset, and she went up and broke 400 barrels, let's see, that's the equivalent of 40,000, 50,000 shekel today. That means she takes your brand new car and bashes it, you know, she releases the clutch and it goes off the hill. And she says, next time you give me a drink of that wine, what do you say? That's ground for a divorce, lady. This is, you're crazy. Go get help. Go to anger management therapy. She drove my car off the cliff, so I didn't send her a little bit of wine. So? No, how many people? And he takes it calmly. He says, consider it paid. Consider it as though I sent you that cup of wine within the 400 barrels. What would we say? We'd say, lady, you need help. I'll get you the number of a therapist. Right? What would we say? But he didn't say that. He didn't say that. So our sages teach us, no one's coming to say that her behavior was appropriate. No one's coming to say that your wife should release the clutch and let your car, your brand new car, go off the cliff. No one's saying that. What we are saying is that we have to be flexible. And flexible means even if my partner is wrong, I have to be ready to work with it. That means we will encounter within marriage surprises. Our spouse will encounter surprises, and those surprises change. The surprises you have a week into marriage is different than the surprise you'll have a year into marriage. The surprises change, and we have to be flexible, and we have to constantly give over the message we've been discussing the last 2 weeks. Achati yonati tamati. My dove is singular and beloved. The only one. The Talmud tells us a mind-boggling line. As we read the Megillah on Purim, So it says, we know Ahasuerus took Esther by force, and Esther was forced to marry him. And then Esther didn't want to, but okay, he's the king. She didn't have a way out. And Mordechai repeatedly tells her, do not divulge what nation you're from. Don't tell him who your family is. Ahasuerus continuously makes overtures to try and get Esther to reveal. So the first thing he does is he has an idol over his bed. He has an idol in the figure of Vashti, his former wife. He removes that and puts Esther up there. So whenever he looks up, he sees Esther's beautiful face. Fine. Next, he sends out a tax relief. And he says, Esther, if I'd know who your people are, I could give them a greater tax break. If I'd know who your family was, I could give them a greater tax break. And then he starts sending out gifts. And he says, this is in honor of my brand new wife, Esther. And he tells Esther, if I knew who your family was, I could give them better gifts. And Esther doesn't say a word. And then he makes a legal holiday. Banks have to be shut. Everyone has to take the day off. And he calls it the holiday of Esther. And he says, Esther, you see the whole world celebrating our marriage. Don't you think we can make your family happy? She doesn't say a word. So Ahasuerus is frustrated. His new wife is not telling him what family and what nation she's from. So he goes to his advisor, to Mordechai. And Mordechai gives him good advice. Mordechai says, En isha mitkana ela beyerech chaverta. A woman is only jealous of another woman. So Mordechai tells Ahasuerus, the only way, the best tool you could use to pressure Esther is to create competition. So first of all, Mordechai gave him real advice. In fact, the next line in Talmud is more startling. The Talmud says that Ahasuerus started a new pageant. He said, Esther, gee, I guess you're not going to tell me. I'm going to have to look elsewhere. So he starts inviting new girls to the palace. He's going to interview new girls. That pressure is huge because the previous queen, when she was demoted, she was executed. Ahasuerus had her hung. He didn't leave her on the sidelines. The Talmud says, as we read the verses, it says, "Uvehikavetz betulot shenit." As girls, as virgins, were gathered a second time to the palace, Umordechai yoshev b'shar hamelech, Mordechai was by the king's gates, Ein Esther magedet moladeta, Esther did not reveal, she did not divulge what family she came from. So the Talmud says, what's the verse telling me? That as Ahasuerus ups the pressure, Mordechai would stand behind him signaling to Esther, no you don't give it away. What did the Talmud just say? That it worked. As much as Esther did not want to be married to Ahasuerus, when he starts another pageant, the pressure can even turn her. Even a pious woman like Esther is moved. The Talmud gives us a key point. A woman cannot handle competition. If a woman is at home and she feels there's competition in the house, that's an untenable situation for her. So you'll say, of course I won't have competition. It's innocent that my former neighbor is my friend on Facebook. Susan, I never had an improper thought about Susan. We just grew up together. Susan doesn't belong on your Facebook. What about Carol? She's my best friend's sister. I'm going to just take her off. Doesn't matter. Step one, you're getting married. You're expected to be loyal to someone. You know, in my position, very often women think it's appropriate to ask me to be friends on Facebook. And they could be my cousins, and they could be people who are in our congregation. And I write back, I say, I have a standard line. I write back, I say, Facebook gives you two options, to accept or decline. And I choose to respectfully explain. And I think that it is not appropriate. I'm not saying that those who do it are wrong, but I don't think it's appropriate. And if you'll check all my Facebook friends, you'll see there isn't a single woman there. Maybe my wife, I don't know. I don't know if I ever did that, checked that or not, because she sees the same account as I do. But a woman should not have to deal with competition. So the most obvious is that. The most obvious, if you show up to a simcha and you stand there chatting to your friend's wife, it's not right. Be chatting with your own wife. The most obvious are those examples. But now let's talk about less obvious examples. So I don't think we have to expand on the idea that part of our loyalty is that we should not be spending time with people of the opposite gender. And if we're in an office setting, so then we should try to maintain the relationship where we speak as Mrs. So-and-so or Ms. So-and-so and not on a first-name basis. I remember we had a secretary who was single. She was older, and I once went to the Rosh Yeshiva, a different yeshiva, and I said, we need copies of these pages for the shiur. So he said to me, okay, so ask the secretary to prepare it. So I wasn't sure who he was talking to. There were two secretaries. I said, you mean Rachel? He says to me, who's Rachel? I said, that's one of the secretaries. He says to me, why do you know? Why do you know her first name? I just know she's the secretary. Boom! Okay. Taught me something. Important lesson. Sometimes you come to a doctor's office and they ask you to look at the screen and she's looking at the screen and you're looking at the screen. It's not so appropriate that your heads are so close to one another as you're looking at a computer screen. Today you could tell her, email it to me. I'll look at it on my computer screen or on my phone. Most people here have phones that can see the screen. You're not supposed to sit there so close looking at a screen. So that's the obvious example. I want to go over to less obvious examples. There are other forms of competition that we don't really think about. Let's take most people's prime investment of time, and that is a guy tells his wife, you are wonderful, you are great, and I'd love to spend time with you. Gotta go. Come on, there's work. So a person can go to work and give his wife the feeling that the work is his first wife, and his wife is his second wife. Men have good excuses. Men will say, you want bread on the table. I'm working very hard to support the family. Pause. Is your work your first wife, or is your wife your first wife? Some people say, my wife takes care of the family so that I can work. The more correct approach is, I work so that my wife can take care of the family. Which one is it? Most people are the former. She takes care of the home so I can work. That's wrong. The work is supportive of the home. Our focus in life is the home. What I'm doing in life, one of the most important things I'm ever going to do in this world, is the home I'm going to build. It is the most challenging, it is the most draining, but it is the most worthwhile. It's probably the hardest thing you'll do in your life. Build a home. Build a relationship with your spouse. It doesn't go easy. If it goes easy, you don't have a real relationship. Real relationships are hard. Real relationships involve a tremendous hardship. You're talking about the most worthwhile thing on the planet. Well, if it's the most worthwhile thing, it involves a lot of investment. You're going to see your friends and you're going to think their marriage is easy because their wife is normal. No, I got news for you. Your wife is also normal. And they don't have it easy. They're just not telling you. And on the outside, you look like you're having fun too. No one knows what goes on behind closed doors, right? Marriage involves work. You're ready to get married, you're getting ready to work. But he has the greatest rewards. It has the greatest benefits. You're building the most worthwhile thing in the world. But it involves work. And the first point, and that's the point we've been discussing for 3 weeks now, is giving our wives that feeling that they are number one and there's no competition that comes close. It's not like you're first, but work is second. No, you're the only one. You're in a realm of your own. And everything else I do is supportive of that, is for the sake of that, is for the sake of the relationship and the home I'm building. So you ask a person if holding on to your marriage meant losing your job. People would go, that's a tough question. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's not a tough question. There's one thing that's the most important, and everything else is transient. The home we're building is not. It's the most important thing we're doing. You mean I have to lose my job to keep my home? Maybe. And if you do, ain mala sot, as they say in French. There's nothing you can do. If you have a different way to do it, fine. And if you, okay, it wasn't French, you got me. It's Hebrew, fine. That's the most important thing in the world. And there's nothing that comes close to it. A job can come and go. The home we're building is one. And it requires of us to shift. This is not the approach that Western civilization teaches us. I met a psychologist who told me he made Aliyah because he couldn't stand his job. I said, aren't you a psychologist here too? He said, yeah. I said, so what's the difference? He said, I was there after 9/11. And I got so sick and tired of people coming in and saying, I can't handle a marriage with this guy. He's not making the money he used to. And I'm supposed to empathize with them. And it's the most ridiculous claim in the world, but to their mind, it's the most legitimate claim in the world. Why should I stay with him if he's not making that kind of money anymore? That's a legitimate claim. He said, I, that's when he decided to make Aliyah. He's not dealing with that anymore. But we have to shift. We're affected. People today think there are all kinds of legitimate reasons to destroy a marriage. There are very few legitimate reasons to destroy a marriage. We have to work, and it involves work. And we have to give them the feeling that they're number one. And as life progresses, that involves flexibility on our behalf because there are going to be different demands. The demands of what you have to give in on when you're married for a day and a week are of one nature. And Be'ezrat Hashem, when you have a child and it's a question of who gets up in the middle of the night to change the diaper, and your wife says, I'm getting up to nurse the baby anyways. And you say, if you're getting up to nurse the baby, doesn't it make sense you should already change the diaper and nurse the baby? Why do I have to get up? And she says, if I'm going to get up to nurse, you get up to change the diaper. And you're thinking, my neighbor doesn't get up to change diapers. You don't know what your neighbor's doing. He's doing a million other things. We all have the areas where we help. I tell all young couples, you get up, you guys get up to do the diapers. Ladies, don't listen. But the guys, if I were talking to ladies, I'd tell ladies a different thing. But it involves different flexibility. As marriage goes on, it involves different flexibility. But the key point is, she is number one. The home is number one. And we live in a society where that's not the message that we get. People will say marriage is a partnership. I heard a wonderful, wonderful class by Brian Tracy. The only problem is he speaks about marriage like work. And then he reaches a point where he says, why don't you analyze your relationship and see if you'd get back into it if you had to do it all over again? And if the answer is no, then you have to reconsider. And I beg to disagree. The statistics we know are that 50%, over 50%, somewhere between 50 and 60% of the people who are married are willing to admit that if they had to do it all over again, they wouldn't. And Rav Simcha Cohen, who is an expert on marriage, says he doesn't believe the other 40%. He doesn't believe anyone who's experienced marriage would really choose that all over again, because marriage involves a lot of work, and you always have that temptation to think, with someone else, it would involve different work, less work. It would be more normal, more flexible, more easy. Think again. Marriage always involves work, and it's always hard. If we work hard, it becomes sweet. But it involves work. And the first and most basic message we have to give is you are number one. You are the most important. The relationship is the most important. And nothing else comes close. Now, that doesn't mean that a person shouldn't hold on to a job. That doesn't mean that every morning your wife wakes up and says, honey, why don't we spend the day together? You're supposed to say, great idea. We will still discuss how you're supposed to answer that. We'll discuss that. We'll get there. Because there will be many times that your wife will say, why don't you spend the day home? Why don't you take the kids to school?
It's going to be really hard to pick him up today. Can you come home early? And if your answer is always going to be yes, you might lose your job, and that might not be so good. So there are ways to approach that, which we will discuss. But on the basic level, the basic approach has to be the marriage is number one. Now, maybe we have to figure out what tools we can use to keep the marriage number one and still keep our job. But the balance is, number one is the marriage. And if I have no choice, then I hold on to the marriage and I forgo other things. So people will ask all the questions that you guys might be thinking. So if I have a choice of having a good relationship with my siblings or having a good relationship with my wife can't stand my brother, so do I hold on to the wife or do I hold on to the brother? And the answer is
wife.
So you'll say, but my wife gets annoyed when I call to wish my parents a good Shabbos. So I'm not supposed to call and wish my parents a good Shabbos. So I've told many people, call from work, call on Thursday, send an email or an SMS. You don't have to call from home and annoy her. But my parents insist I should call on Friday. So you say no. You could honor them and respect them and still find a way to make your wife happy. But that's important. But is it fair that my wife should have such demands? Maybe yes, maybe no. Is she taking your brand new Ferrari and letting it go down the hill? Because the Talmud says when she bashed 400 barrels, he didn't get annoyed. He didn't yell. Now, ladies, I'm not telling you to do that. But gentlemen, I am saying they taught us perspective. We're not taking marriage as something that's nice to have, but worst comes to worst, I won't have. Marriage is life, and marriage is a given that it's going to be that way, and it's our prime focus. Everything else has to work around the marriage. Tov.